Welcome to the Interactive Journey. Come along with us as we share the stories of parents, children, and professionals navigating a challenging world of various diagnoses, life transitions, and being human.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
We're super excited to have you. So I'm your host, Rachel Watson, here with our other hosts, Logan McIntosh and Megan Chukowski. Thanks for tuning in, Mom, to the Interactive Journey. Really appreciate it. We have Tim Crilly here from one of the coolest podcasts I've ever actually listened to, called ABA Unfiltered. Thank you, Tim, for joining us from California. What's the weather like today?
Well, I live down in San Diego, so it's actually, we are legally required for it to be 73 degrees every day. let me check.
And what happens when it goes above or below?
Well, we let it slide. The high is only going to be 64 today. So, you know. Oh, well. We also get into this thing where it's called May gray and then June gloom, where near the coast, like, it kind of gets just socked in with overcast. So we're sort of living through that right now. So it doesn't really warm up.
Yeah, my brother Michael and my sister-in-law Beth, they lived out there in Carlsbad for quite a while.
Okay, I'm one town south.
Yes, and that's what I saw when I was looking at your profile. And I just remember that time. They're like, just don't come out in May and June and you're good to go if you want nice sunny weather.
Yeah, September and October, I mean, back in the old days, they were the best. Now it's just like fire season. So I don't really know what the best time of year is anymore.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where it's not even news anymore, which is weird. Unless it's like, you know,
yeah, it's awful.
Well, there's plenty of news in the news these days. We don't even need to go there. I actually stopped watching it. But anyway, Tim Crilly here is the podcast host from ABA Unfiltered with his producer, Andrew. We have to give him props.
Oh, Andrew's the best.
He was very helpful. Him Good. And Logan got down and dirty talking tech stuff. So thank you, Andrew.
Down and nerdy.
Down and nerdy, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, the social media folks like Meredith, they also make me look good too. So gotta say hello
to
them.
Thanks, Meredith. Can we call you next too? Can you help us out?
No, our VP of marketing might forbid that one.
All right, I'm sure.
You can't have Meredith.
She's too important to the cog.
So we found Tim when in the early stages of the Interactive Journey, we were tasked by Megan to figure this out. Like, hey, guys, let's do a podcast. So, of course, I go right to Google and I look up ABA podcasts, and yours was on a list of top five ABA podcasts.
So don't know how that's possible, but okay.
I don't know. I think they've since taken the website down.
Okay, Google. It shut Google down.
Questioning the legitimacy, Rachel. We've listened. We know it's legit.
Now, so on one of the many drives, you know, to and back from soccer with my kids, I listened to you and found you really dry and funny. And I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't think that podcasts were funny. I just thought they were all kind of, you know, boring. And when I say dry, I'm sorry, I mean like you have a dry sense of humor.
Yeah, I understand. I appreciate that.
And I loved it. And I was like, oh, he's like a real person.
Yeah.
Like, and then, and you know, you made it seem possible for us to be able to do this. So I do appreciate what you have done for Blue Sprig. And I wanted to also, sorry, I say a lot of thank God we have Logan here with her editing skills. I need a Cybus, right?
You need a swear jar.
Yeah. I like your ums. Who gets that money?
We're going to have for happy hour tomorrow then.
Lunch, yeah. It's lunch at the end of the week.
So I found you because I stalked you. You were not on Facebook, but I did find you on LinkedIn. And
It's all I have.
Yep. I sent you this really weird message like, hey, we're these crazy people in New Jersey. Would you mind, you know, sharing with us some of your advice as far as starting a podcast. And you were kind enough to spend the time with Logan and I on the phone a couple weeks ago. So really cool to have you here. Thank you for your time. I also want to say that this is the first time that you have been a guest. on a podcast. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I
was assigned, I did a radio interview for some local radio station in Florida. So, but that was like recorded, and then it was like sort of they played it on like a Saturday. So that was the first time I'd really been sort of interviewed for any sort of, you know, sort of media. So this is my first interactive interview like this. That was like way more scripted. And so this should be a little bit easier and more relaxing.
Awesome. As a host, how do you select who you're going to have? Like what kind of topics?
It's a good question. I think, you know, when this first started, it was during the pandemic, and my first producer was an intern, and I don't know where he came from. It was just our CEO Keith called and said, "Hey, we have this guy Lucas. He's gonna put a podcast together for us, and you're gonna host it." And at the time, I was like, "Wait, what are you talking about?" I thought I was like being punished for some reason, because sort of thinking like who would want to listen to this? This can only make me look bad. You know, and I was like, I don't know what I did wrong, but here I am and I'm going to host it. And
why do you think they chose you?
I don't know. I mean, I think we can get back to that, but I think my time at, I was with Magellan. I was sort of the first BCBA to, be brought over from the provider side into the insurance side, and my time there made me both famous and infamous in the community. Some people loved me, some people loved to argue with me, but we always, at the end of it, like I have this like kind of small group of people that I consider the friends I have who called to yell at me, and there's about eight of them that I'm now sort of like have a relationship with, and the only reason we met was because they called to yell at me. So I think part of why they looked in my direction was I know a lot of people in the community, especially, I mean, more specifically out here in California. So there was some level of, and I was doing air quotes for you listening at home, some level of name recognition to a degree. So I don't know. And I don't mind talking, and I'm not really afraid to get up and talk. So I think those were sort of the two of the reasons. And maybe it was secretly a way for Keith to just sort of, you know, bust on me a little bit. I don't know. So when we first, back to the original question of how do we pick our guests? When we first started it, I didn't really know what I was going to do. And we didn't know what we were doing. So Lucas and I, we sat down and I put together a list of people both internally at Bluesbrig that we wanted to highlight because of the work that they were doing. But then we put together a little bit of an outside talent list. And, you know, I reached out to them, and, you know, everyone was like, sure, I'll do it. What's the harm? And we made the mistake that first season, we recorded all of our episodes all at once. We tried to get a whole season like in the can or whatever, you know, you like lingo you want to use. And it just, when they started to come out, it didn't feel as authentic. Like one person's episode came out in October, and I think as they were closing out, they said, "Hey, we'll have a great 4th of July weekend," you know, and like, we're like, okay, we probably have to like cut that out and that sort of thing. So I think from some of those early lessons, you know, I also learned I can't just talk to anybody. There has to be a topic that I find at least remotely interesting that I can then sort of help generate the conversation, because we learned a little bit of, okay, after 10 minutes, I don't care about what you're saying. I have nothing else to ask you. And then it becomes pulling teeth. So, you know, I think that's how we pick guests. We look at like, who do I know? Who's interesting? What topic would they want to talk about? And do I have any spark of passion within that topic? So there is a selfishness to it in a way, because it's more about what I think I can pull off in a 30 to 40 minute conversation.
Yeah, because you're going to have to contribute to it.
Yeah.
It sounds like you care.
Right. But that's cool. They give you that creative freedom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think early on, I also learned, don't script it. I would jot down a couple topics, like, okay, this person's here to, you know, the caregiver guidance is their thing, whatever. And so I would say, okay, here's what I'm interested in. We would jot down some notes. In the early part, I tried to script it a little bit more, and I'm not a great, like, oral reader. So it was really bad. But I was also really nervous about what I was saying because it's being recorded and who knows. But then I started to think, well, who's going to listen to this?
Right.
So I just tried to be a little bit more myself and authentic and not worry about it. And, you know, sort of some of the stupid jokes we make. And, you know, Lucas at the time was like he was a senior in college. So I would make a reference to, like, you know, VHS tapes or whatever. And then I'd like pause and be like, so Lucas, VHS tapes were, the, you know, and he's looking at me like, what? Stop it. You know, but that was sort of what we were doing and goofing around. You know, he moved on and Andrew came on and Andrew's been, not to say that Lucas wasn't great, but Andrew's really helped me stay a little bit more on top of everything. And he truly produces, like he keeps us in line.
So your VP asked you to start this, but talk to us a little bit about like how you got to the point where before you started this, like give us a little background on you and your
life. Oh, sure. Well, I've been in this field since about 2004. I was teaching and it wasn't my thing. And I met, there was an aide at a school that I was at and she worked for a company called ACES, which is a pretty big company. They're out in California predominantly, but they're scattered around the Western United States. I didn't know what ABA was. I, you know, barely knew anything about autism. And back in those days, that didn't really matter. You just sort of like had a driver's license and, you know, you had a heartbeat. You could
kind
of
go in
and start working. So I left teaching and went and did that. And I really fell in love with it. I think my passion with, you know, working with, you know, younger people was better suited in a one-on-one you know, sort of environment as opposed to trying to manage a whole classroom. So I sort of went back to school twice. Like, you know, my boss at the time, Dr. Sharon Kerr, convinced me to go back to school, got my master's, got my VCBA. So I was at ACES for about 9 years and sort of had maybe emotionally grown out of what I was doing there. And this job at Magellan popped up and I was like, well, there's no way I'm going to get this job. And I started interviewing for it, I think in June of 2013. And I had to have 7 interviews to get the job. It was crazy. And then by then I was like, I am getting this job. I don't know if I even wanted it anymore, but my ego had taken over and it was like, I had to jump through all these hoops. I'm getting this job.
Yeah.
So, Michelle Brennan Cook, she was the one that met Magellan that brought me on. And, when I found out, I was like, you know, breathing into a paper bag. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. But my time at Magellan turned out to be probably, you know, the best paid internship I've ever had in my life. I was kind of stressed and, you know, it was hard and trying to learn managed care and sort of the pressures of, you know, the regulation and all the rules and, you know, just trying to learn all that. But they wanted a BCBA, someone who understood the programming, the clients, the parents, the lingo. So, you know, my role wasn't necessarily to understand insurance, you know, but they pounded it into me and, you know, I had a headache for the first 6 months.
We're grateful for that, honestly, because on the other end of it, as providers, and we would call companies such as Magellan and in the very beginning and talk to them about what exactly we do and just really no concept of understanding what ABA was. And I felt like from the outside going in, we were holding their hands to help them develop their processes because it was also new. And so you're now hired on the inside and
absolutely
doing some similar things.
You know, and what is it? That's almost 10 years ago. It's crazy. And I still think we're still a little bit of an unknown. We're a round peg in a square hole as it relates to sort of, you know, normal insurance services. You know, so I think there still is a lot of understanding and room for growth as it relates to our ability as practitioners to really operate in a system that I don't know if the trust has really been built, and we're 10, 15 years into it. And I think that's still something we need to overcome in this sort of partnership that we've engaged in. You know, and I think my big takeaway, like, you know, I said earlier, is obviously I made a lot of friends, and that was really good. And it really helped me sort of in the next phases of what I've done. But I think my big takeaway from my time at Magellan was that really what we're all here to do is we're really consumer protection. You know, our role, no matter where you fall into working with these families, is to make sure that we are providing the most beneficial and ethical care. Now, people see that in different ways, and I'm not here to say what's right or wrong, but from that standpoint, I would say, like, that's what we need to focus on. It's about those families, and how do you ensure that they're getting exactly what they need and when they need it? And that's sort of what I've tried to impart as I've moved forward, you know, away from Magellan, and bounced around a little bit, and finally sort of landed here almost 5 years ago at Blue Sprague, at the very, very beginning of Blue Sprague. I think, you know, I'm employee 4 or 5. There's a lot of debate on that. It's like, well, I started first. Yeah, but I signed my letter of intent first, you know, those sorts of things. But, you know, sort of being a part of something that started so small and exploded into something so large has been very fun to watch.
It's funny when I, you know, picture the origins of Magellan and when the ABA benefit, you know, came out, I just picture like you and like 4 or 5 other BCBAs sitting in a room on the phone, like with provider after provider, just saying, "Here, tell me what the goals and objectives were. Where did you meet them? What are you doing?" And stuff like that. Was that what it was like?
Well, so our biggest contract when I was there was the Blue Shield of California. And so out here in California, it was, we have a regional center system that was handling all of those things. So it's sort of broken into two buckets, 0 to 3 and you know, 4 and up, or 3 and up, I guess, because you sort of exited out on your third birthday. And really what it did was people just took what they had and moved it over. And it really just was off everything. There was no sort of ability, because you had to do it like that. There wasn't a lot of that sort of ability to say, well, this seems inappropriate, this seems right, blah, blah, blah. We couldn't really do that. I wasn't there yet. So I didn't join for another year. So it was really non-BCBAs. It was more of what you guys are describing. It's just, it was people that were licensed and allowed to authorize care, and just authorizing anything that came on. So then when I started and we were starting to like sort of build that team, it was, how do you unwind some of this, mm-hmm. this programming that just seems way out of whack. And that's where the frustration started to set in with me. It was kind of impossible to sort of regulate anything, and any pushback we got from anybody, Blue Shield or, you know, whatever, just like, they didn't want to sort of go down that route. So we sort of ended up in a system where it became less about actually managing it, which has drastically changed now. I mean, this is, I'm talking early days. So now you have BCBAs and you have real conversations and all these things. But that was part of my frustration early on, and sort of what led me to say, maybe I could do something different to have an impact, because it really felt like I was just sort of it was a lot of infighting with other BCBAs, or, you know, sort of, you know, people that owned organizations and wanted to tell me that the way they did it was the right way. And I'm sitting there saying, well, I have these list of rules, you know, like owners would say, well, I don't even think a BCBA should have to be, it's like, okay, well, this person might be really good at it, and I understand, but I have a network requirement that you have to fall into. Or, you know, I'm sort of responsible for the RBT being more of a mandated insurance requirement. I understand what that did and how that became a huge headache for people.
Yeah,
but
thanks a lot on that one. Yeah.
Sure, I understand that. And that's no, like my phone looked like a Christmas tree when that was coming out. It's just, but when you consider what we're trying to do, and you know, you have 5 agencies that you interact with all the time, because they have, say, 70% of the clients. But then you have we had 395 agencies in our network. So there was like a ton of onesie twosies, and you don't really know anything about them because you only interact with them once or twice a year. So from that like sort of network control and standardization, you had to have something. And I did put it off as long as I could until there was an actual test. And I figured like, okay, well now at least they're like putting something down on paper that says they're competent, as opposed to who knows who's signing off on what. So, you know, you can give me credit there, I guess, but I get it. I'm, you know, and that's part of what some of the unpopular things that, you know, I was involved in, but in my head, this was what was the best thing for those families. This is that level of consumer protection that I can offer from this perspective. Did it do anything? I don't know, but at least it like it put a little stamp there that said, okay, it's something.
Well, and as behavior analysts functioning under the BACB, I mean, that is part of our continuum of RBT, BCABA, BCBA, et cetera. I think that is important because it's letting the consumer know these individuals have a certain level of qualification in that they've at least taken the 40 hours, demonstrated competency, and taken a test in order to get those letters after their name. So I could totally see why insurance would want that. So as much as it was a headache, I do understand the logic behind it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now here we are. You're a podcaster. Congratulations, that's wonderful.
Sure.
Who has been your favorite guest that you've had? Not that you should have favorites, I know, but we all do.
No, I have. I don't know if it's favorite guests or just favorite episodes.
Okay.
We had a conversation with Dr. Shala Alai from the University of North Texas, and I was so out of my depth talking to her. It was amazing. If you get a chance, it's out there. It's from maybe last October-ish. It's just, she's so insightful and just talking about like everything. And I can't even like tell you what the topics really were, but I would say that one was amazing. In our first season, we talked to, a young man on the spectrum. He's in his 20s named Cordell. And, he just sort of told us a story about, being bullied in high school and running into that person later in life, like a couple years after high school, and what that interaction and how that person didn't understand who he was at the time in high school, and how impactful it was for her later on to understand who he was and understand her behavior towards him back at that time. And it's like, you know, you'd be sobbing when you're listening to that one. And then I think Dr. Carbone was on, and we ended up doing a two-parter because we just got off on this tangent about his like college and how he wanted to be a professional baseball player. And like, I just like, I didn't even care about all the science and ABA. So we just talked about that for like 25 minutes. And I was like, oh gosh. So we kind of did like a two-parter. And I think he was like super excited to talk about that stuff and not come on and, you know, talk about verbal behavior and all that stuff. But it was really interesting, and about how he was BF Skinner's like chauffeur when he would come visit the college and stuff. It was a really great conversation. So I'd say those three sort of stand out, and I apologize to any other guests, but they're all good. But you know, those really just sort of jump out to me as must listen to.
Who's like your dream guest?
I mean, my dream guest isn't live in the ABA world. I could have anybody on, I'd love to interview Tina Fey. That would be my dream guest.
Oh, she'd be great. Yeah.
I would love to find out about her creative process. And she does like self-deprecating humor better than anybody, in a way that like just no one else does it. And I don't know, it just appeals to, I would love, not that I would like have the guts to actually have the conversation, but that would be my dream guest.
All right. So Tina, give a call.
Yeah, sure.
Tim's waiting. Tim's been waiting for you.
What do you think, what topic or area in special needs, ABA, do you feel like isn't getting enough attention and could probably use some more?
I think it's an easy one. I think it's the adults. We just don't have a solution at the moment. We talk about it. We've been talking about it. You know, we have, you know, the numbers go up every year and all those kids are becoming adults at some point. So I think really a real plan for how to address that, you know, because if you say the word vocational to a health plan, they're going to, you know, come at you, you know, those sorts of things. So, which I get, but, you know, I think you can make a case if you're creative why vocational skills fall under an MNC guideline, but, you know.
Were you part of that as well?
What part? Which part? No, I mean, we just, that's the problem. We didn't get a lot of, people weren't even really trying to treat adults because, you know, you just sort of programmed not to.
Well, and year after year, the funding just kept going away. So.
Sure. You know, and I think it's, we rely so much on state funding and people just get sort of lumped into to buckets that maybe they don't belong in, and that becomes part of the problem as well. So that would be, that to me, that's a big one. I think maybe more specialization in our field as well. I think we go out and we ask BCBAs to be a jack of all trades and sort of decent to adequate at everything. And that's not really a realistic expectation. And I can't really think of other professional, you know, certainly like healthcare professionals that we ask to do that. If I'm really bad or not interested in caregiver guidance and I go out and I sort of do not great caregiver guidance, why is that parent ever going to want to meet with me again? I'm hoping they cancel. They're hoping I cancel, you know, so we're not really fulfilling a lot of that work. You know, not everyone is great at assessing. Not everyone wants to sit and write reports, nor should they, because, you know, a report really, when you're submitting that report, it's more important than your social media, how pretty your website is. That's really your reputation. And we just sort of, everybody go and do it. And it's to me, I just think we need to look at how do you drive that in our industry and get people to understand that, you know, it's, there's three or four prongs to what a BCBA does, and you can't master them all, especially when you're 24, 5, 6 and fresh into the field. So those are two things that sort of I think about off and on.
It's interesting you bring up parent training, because that's something that's really been quite fresh in all of our minds and something that we've been, you know, always working on remastering, because we noticed that so many, especially new BCBAs, don't know how to conduct parent
training. Sure. Well, we don't train them. There's no curriculum. And I don't think people get into this industry thinking, oh, I'm going to sit down in a living room with adults. That's not why they start out on this path. But you do have people that are really good at it. And maybe it shouldn't be BCBAs. Maybe it should be other licensed mental health professionals, and LMFT and LCSW, someone with the soft skills to sort of deal with some of the mental health related issues that go into being a parent with a child on the spectrum. Or, you know, we've all walked into a house and as an RBT or whatever, or, you know, a BCBA, and have parents just unload because they just need someone to talk to, and doesn't mean you're trained to handle that situation. So, you know, maybe we are looking at it from the wrong lens. And I know a lot of BCBAs might push back on that, but I think there's a place for other mental health professionals to be involved in what we do, because it's a complex disorder with, you know, sort of a complex set of needs.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, I just watching some of the style of some of our more strict behavior analysts are really, you know, 100% data. And that is, we are driven by data, but they don't have any very poor soft skills. And they'll go into a home and the parents are like, I've gotten calls. Who is this person that you've sent into my house that can't even really formulate a sentence, made a beautiful graph?
Sure.
But can't even formulate a sentence that would like connect with me and what I'm going through every day, expecting me to take all this data. I have three kids at home. I'm a single parent and I'm working full time. And you want me to take data when I get home from work and I still have to make dinner? And
good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So actually we've tapped in. Rachel's really mentoring some of our newer consultants, especially to be able to provide more effective parent training based upon, I mean, your counseling mm-hmm. skills, mm-hmm. but also based upon, you know, some of the history that you've had, because we are, and it's not just us. I know it's other providers as well. It's pretty prevalent in the field.
Sure.
So, you know, just trying to flip the script a little bit and make some changes, because ultimately we just want to help our clients and their families to be as independent and not need us.
So last night at hockey, I'm thinking about this and I'm listening to trainings on parent training, and I kind of reframed it in my mind to look at it like I could be a parent training facilitator, mm-hmm. you know, because I can't come in. I have a good amount of experience in this field, but I haven't, you know, done all of the things that the BCBAs have done with these families. And I haven't, you know, teased out the data and made the graphs for these particular families. So it's kind of trying to bridge the gap. And I think you're right, you know, looking at those soft skills that they just may not have developed yet, because if they are earlier, you know, early on in their career.
And we started calling it caregiver guidance as well. I think, you know, the idea of a 25, 26, 27, whatever person training a parent, I think also can be off-putting to a family as well. So I think we've just sort of tried to soften that language and that sort of thing. So I think there's a sort of a growing movement there. I think people are starting to wake up to it. You know, when we were doing some of our early acquisition stuff and meeting with people, you know, one of the first topics that we would sort of bring up with prospective, you know, partners in that was, what is their attitude towards caregiver guidance? And we had some people say like, well, you know, we only do it if the parent requests it. And we're like, well, okay, well, you're not going to fit in with us culturally or, you know, philosophically, because, you know, I mentioned Sharon Kerr, like the person that got me to go back to school. She's actually our chief mm-hmm. clinical officer at Blues Break. She came over, and my boss, Michelle Brennan Cook, who was the lady that brought me into Magellan. She's our VP or executive vice president of quality service quality or something like that. So I've had two of my former bosses come, and they work here, but Sharon and I would be in these meetings, and, you know, Sharon always hammered into us as when she was training people that your role as a BCBA is to work yourself out of a job. It's to come in, provide those supports, and get out. So if you're not working with that family to do those things, then what are we doing? You know, this shouldn't be a lifelong service. And there are agencies out there that view this as, well, Timmy has autism, he's always going to need ABA. And that just sort of doesn't jive with what I think we should be doing as a field.
And that's a tough message to give. And that's a tough message as a parent to hear, especially nowadays when there's these wait lists that are months, mm-hmm. if not years long. And when you start to put that out there right away, like, look, I'm just going to try to, you know, work myself out of even coming here.
Yeah. I get it. And, you know, it's about controlling that narrative and having the right message from the beginning. I think some people come in and say, okay, mom, you've had it real hard for the last 2 years. You go over there and take it easy. We got this. And that's just not what we should be doing. I you know, it's hard, and that's the reality. And it's not going to be an easy 6 months as we start to try to unwind some of this behavior. It's going to get maybe a little bit messier, before it feels a little bit better. And, you know, those are the sorts of, you know, preliminary conversations that you need to sort of, you know, drive home when you first start with families.
Well, some of our clinicians are trained in the Early Start Denver model, and the parent training component that's just key in that really has made such a difference. So we're starting with our really young learners right off the bat, empowering the parents to be therapists mm-hmm. and partner with us. Not, they don't have to do everything right off the bat, but really to partner with us so that we are transferring the skills to them, so then they can take the client throughout their life and have those skills, because we will eventually exit services.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we forget that they are little, they are kids, mm-hmm. and we get so caught up in drilling, programming, all this stuff. And, you know, some of the play stuff and, you know, some of the, just like the run of the mill, I'm a 4-year-old, what I should be doing during the day sort of gets lost in some of our therapeutic sessions. And I think we need to focus more on that too, and sort of make sure that we're teaching those sort of, we're not teaching, but allowing some of those play skills to just sort of naturally evolve within those within those settings and not make it just about work.
Absolutely. So flipping a little bit, what do you think is something that you've learned that you wished you had known when you were younger? Yeah, your 24-year-old self.
Oh, gosh, I was teaching, so. but as it relates to this world, it's kind of obvious, but I think too many people are afraid to raise their hand and say, I don't know. I don't know how to do this. I need help. I think knowing that asking for help, means you are the right person to sort of go through this. I think too many people want to jump right into leadership positions, and it's not necessarily a realistic expectation. There is a learning curve. But I think the way we've been just so desperate for BCBAs, we've created a system where, boom, you're in, you're getting as much money as we can squeeze out, and you, because we got you and now we have you, and that person might leave in 6 months for 10 cents more. But I think, going back and saying, okay, be patient, know that you can ask for help when you need it, really learn it, and make sure you're doing this. The money's there or whatever. I mean, I'm not going to try to get into someone's pocket, but I think understanding that where you are, who you're working with, oftentimes is way more important than what they're paying you. And I think those sorts of values are what I would like to, sort of convey to maybe not a younger me as much, but just the younger group of people coming into this field.
Yeah. Cause there's absolutely something to be said for living and doing the job of what you're now telling other people to do. And mm-hmm. we do, we get consultants who are right out of school and ready to work and jump right in as consultants. And
yep.
They're making these recommendations that are not really realistic because that's what their schooling has told them to do. And technically it should really work, but the reality isn't there. And you have to actually jump in and try it. We try to tell our consultants, you should be running the plan, whatever the plan is, whether it's a behavior plan or skill acquisition, whatever it is, you should be running it, and they're shadowing you and watching you because you're going to learn that what you wrote on that paper really isn't going to work the way that you thought it would. And you're going to have to make adjustments instead of watching them and trying to force them into it. And when we made that flip, it seems like that works a lot better, having the consultant get that experience. A lot of them will come in and they'll work direct care. Some of them won't come in because they don't want to work direct care for mm-hmm. a little bit and work directly with providing those client services. But if they don't have the skills to do the job, we can't put them into a consultant.
Yeah. And, I think, it's like there's no one out there that's like dressing up as a BCBA for Halloween. There's no kids out there saying like, oh, I'm going to be a BCBA when I grow up. So we have a system where we're sort of, people are falling into it late, and then, we don't have a real true path. We don't have sort of a residency sort of model. I think we just, like I said, we were just so desperate for the last 20 years to just pump out BCBAs that we sort of missed our opportunity to create a real system for going through and really being ready when you're done. And I don't know if we can sort of unwind that at all, but I think it would go a long way if we were able to sort of create more of a rotations. You spend this amount of time doing caregiver guidance, this much time doing assessment, and here's your direction time period and all those things. And, maybe pick specialties like I talked about earlier. But we have a factory that we try to pump out, and they can job shop all over town. And that's just sort of the nature of where we're at. And it's been like that forever.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hopeful that it actually will change, because I feel, at least at our company, there are more people in school for their certification than there ever was before.
Sure.
So at some point, maybe it'll start to saturate the market. I don't know that it'll be in my lifetime, but maybe at some point.
Okay, not lifetime. How about career? How about career time? Yeah. How about that?
Right, there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. At least in retirement, you can observe that. Yeah, I don't know. It's sometimes owning it or running an ABA company probably feels like running a staffing agency. It's just, replacing turnover after turnover.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. And it's so funny because in our, we have one school district this year where they requested 25 RBTs. And we did provide that, but it has been one thing after another. We had to hire a staffing coordinator to manage it. And we, my business partner, Melissa and I, we always said, we do not want to be a staffing agency.
No, it's too late. You started an ABA company. So you had already started a staffing company.
Right. So we actually, we're not going to continue with that contract next year. Just because of, you know, how that was not an effective model. Now, if we're going to provide any type of RBTs, we're going to make sure that we're also the consultants, because when you don't have, when they have their own,
you don't have the oversight, staff,
providing oversight, it's very messy. So we learned something this year. Big valuable lesson.
Good. But it's good that you're not saying, well, we'll just kind of force it, you know?
Yeah, no. Yeah. Quality over quantity, really. It's always been key for us. Well, thank you. Thanks for being so upfront and honest. Logan has some questions for you. She always ends with our top 10.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Yeah.
And these are easier questions sometimes.
I have them.
No, I said in one of the lessons learned, I thought, like, okay, at the end of during season one, at the end of every episode, we asked, because, like, oh, I'm going to have all these, like, clinical brains on, and we can, like, get operational definitions. So we did, like, as a hot dog, a sandwich. And then I just, like, at the end, I was asking Lori Unum, and I just felt so silly. So we did move away from that. But there is a funny sort of, is a hot dog a sandwich mashup episode that you can find on, I don't know if it's on the, I think you have to go to the Blue Sprig website and, like, get the podcast link. But it's pretty funny because there's some heavyweights on that, like, giving their definition of what a hot dog is. It's kind of funny.
That's great. Well, I mean, I think that shows a little bit more of their relaxed side too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, but I don't know. But then it was like, okay, I got to get a new one every season, and it just became, that's just too much. I got it. That's too much work.
All right, Logan.
Okay, ready?
Take that tip.
All right. A four-letter word that starts with T.
Tape.
That's a good one. Favorite store.
Favorite store. I mean, this is like, there's a 7-Eleven by my house that has, like, the five things that I need that I can walk to. So here we go.
Good enough. 7-Eleven. A tool you never leave home without.
Is a phone a tool?
Yes. We've had plenty of phones as tools. Stay in or go out?
To eat?
I don't know.
Or just in general?
Are you a homebody or you want to go out? And
I like to go out. I'm not a big traveler because I have to travel so much for work. That when it comes to, like, so.
Aren't you traveling back to New Jersey this summer?
Yeah, we'll probably be there in August. We haven't locked it in yet.
What uncle are we shouting out over here?
Oh, Duke. Duke and Monica. Duke. Yeah. Sudbury Road, Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey.
Your go-to lazy dinner.
Soup, I guess. Canned soup.
Favorite hobby?
Watching youth sports that my children participate in.
Okay. Oh, that's a good dad.
That's a really good one. Favorite pizza topping? Oh boy.
It's boring. Pepperoni, I guess.
Okay. Favorite actor?
Actor?
Yeah.
Well, Tina Fey, I guess. I don't know. But
we'll stick with Tina. Okay. Favorite rainy day activity?
I live in San Diego, so I don't know what that is.
What is rain? And is a hot dog a sandwich?
I never really was forced to answer. I say no because, in my opinion, you have to eat a sandwich with two hands, and a hot dog you don't have to eat with two hands.
Then what would we call
this? What is a hot dog then?
I don't know. Some people say it's a taco.
Yeah, it's like a taco.
It's an American taco. Got it.
That's hysterical.
You should. The mashup's pretty funny.
No, now I'm going to go listen to it. That did make my brain think a little bit.
Yeah, which one is it? I would have said yes. Sandwich.
Like we kicked around.
I
like
would have said no. I just didn't know what it would be.
You could do a cereal soup, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Funny. I like it.
Some new stuff.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
you also provided the most thought through those questions of Logan's.
Yeah.
People are usually like just whatever they come to, comes to their mind. You're like,
Yeah, you seemed a little stressed about it. Yeah.
Were they stressed about questions?
I don't like being interviewed. I don't like being asked questions. So I'd rather do the asking. I like to control things, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, we all have control issues. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. Well, let's end with, what is your life motto?
I thought the other ones were stressful.
Oh my God, he rolled his eyes again to everyone who's listening.
But I'm not this person. Like, I don't have Instagram. I don't have Facebook. I don't post mottos. Like, I don't know.
Be I nice. Think that is your motto.
His motto.
I
don't have LinkedIn. Motto. Get LinkedIn.
All right. Well, have a good one.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Right,
bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Looking for more? Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app and Instagram at The Interactive Journey.
Questions, comments, or want to be a guest on our show? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us at podcast@interactivekids.com or on Instagram at The Interactive Journey.